Hey, superstars, welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by the one, the only powerhouse, Dave Rodriguez. Dave made a name for himself on the voluntarist, anarchist, freedom, love, sovereignty circuit. He's been speaking at the events for years. He was doing great work in California during the lockdowns in terms of standing for freedom, for sovereignty, educating people in his community, galvanizing people in his community, standing up against the atrocious criminal activities of the supposed powers that were. Now he's revolutionizing the education space, working with parents and students. He's helping teens graduate from high school without having to go through the established indoctrination systems. He has his own curricula, he has books, he has coaching programs, support groups for parents who are choosing to homeschool. I am such a fan and admirer of his ideas, of the energy that animates his sparkly, loving, positive, can-do spirit. Full disclosure, I was a little bit nervous for this podcast. I didn't even realize it except during. I just, you know, those people who it's just like, yes, 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 I love what you're doing. That's how I feel about Dave. Of course, I loved this conversation. Before we dive in, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to tell your friends that this is the most fun, expansive podcast that you're listening to, and that they would also benefit from listening because we love expanding the community over here. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Dave Rodriguez. Dave Rodriguez, I'm so excited for our conversation today. How are you, my friend?
I feel wonderful, Danny. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yes, it is my and our pleasure. So it was awesome meeting you at Music and Sky, and your energy was like so sparkly, so open. There's so much going on. And it wasn't until I got back here after we did our podcast together that I really got to dive into your work. And I'm blown away. You are a superhero on so many levels.
Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
And so I want to get into your origin story. I'm so curious because I saw your talk from, was it Anarchapulco?
Mm-hmm.
And you like literally raised the roof. Like I was like in my house being like, amen, yeah. Do you have a religious background? Did you train to be a preacher?
Yes, I was raised in a strict Christian household, and during high school fell away, you know, and rebel and party and be free. And then in college, I kind of came back and got pretty devout for a while. And yeah, I did, was pursuing that path, you know, kind of after my original dream was just to make a lot of money and sit on the beach. And I found out that's a short life right there. We have our life on earth, you know, I have time. So what should I invest my life into? So I pursued, you know, the Christian faith for a while. And yeah, I was pretty devout, you know, attending a few days a week. And I lived in Korea for all about a year, teaching English with a Christian organization. And then when it came down to it, to kind of like be a leader in the church, I just couldn't teach kids about the faith of eternal damnation. You know, I couldn't do it, you know? So I believe one of my philosophies, I take the best and I leave the rest. So there are some good stuff in the Bible, and a lot of my friends are Christians and such, but from a self integrity standpoint, I couldn't teach these people this if I didn't believe in it myself. You know, I was just kind of repeating some stuff. So anyways, then I found self-ownership and freedom and sovereignty and these kind of things, and I'm like, this feels to be more true, you know, and something I can actually invest my life into, because there's so many mysteries in life, and the truth that I found, one of them is I own myself, I own my body, and from there I can build upon that, and that became more exciting. So yes, I love life, and was almost like a pursuing that preacher role, and now I start to see something like that in freedom, not like a freedom pastor or nothing, but like, hey man, let's get it going. Let's empower ourselves. Let's be equip ourselves. Let's understand who we are and, invent, imagine what we're doing here and then help each other. And let's find some ways to get along with each other. And it seems the unifying principle is freedom of choice. And we start to see the last, with the whole pandemic, is like some people don't even know that we're allowed to have freedom of choice. They're just gonna force stuff on us. So that seems to be a very alarming issue for me. It's just a basic unifying principle of humanity. And I get excited about it because I got liberated when I discovered that. When I discovered I own myself, I'm like, man, that's exciting. I'm gonna go tell the world now. So that's kind of the direction this is all going.
Awesome. I love it. And were you turned on by freedom and sovereignty before the pandemic? Like, were you already walking that path?
Yeah, I was a big Ron Paul guy in like 2012. Some of the people out, he ran for president in 2008, 2012, and he's like, bring the troops home and end the wars. And we're like, yeah, who's this guy? End the Fed. That was one of his things. End the Federal Reserve private banking system, which funds all these wars. And I was like, yeah, I was after like knocking on doors, and I had a big old Ron Paul sign on the back of my car, and we're like, yeah, honking at people, yeah. And then I saw how they treated him in the debates and in the elections. And I'm like, this thing seems to be pretty rigged. And that was my conclusion at that point. And so I was like, what are you going to do? I found Jeff Berwick, and he held a conference called Anarchapoco in 2015. And, anarchists don't believe in government, and the word anarchy just means absent of a ruler. So nobody gets to rule anybody. We're all just self-rulers. And I really fell in love with that idea because I was looking for solutions to what's going on the planet, like war called mass murder and mass robbery called taxation and these euphemisms that they tell us. And it's like, even as a kid, you don't feel right about it. Like, what is going on here? So I went there in 2015. I went there 2016 and became the speaker liaison the next year and the next year, and then just slowly got involved and got to speak and got to co-produce. And turns out, as as a leader, like there's a lot of work to be done, and we could use some help, use some volunteers in here, get some extra voices in here, and have hope for the future, because it's like the media puts such a negative spin on everything, and you're just like, oh, we're never gonna get anywhere, we're never gonna win. And I think what's actually happened is they have to censor us because they are losing, and the consciousness pendulum is coming back. And so I have a lot of hope now going to these events, and I'm really grateful for that event. So that kind of got me into these things. I got to meet other people at Anarchapoco who I would never have met, and now it's off to the races, I hope, with all these other awesome events like Music and Sky and the People's Reset in England, Exit and Build. Jim Gale's event is The Path to Freedom in November in Florida. Tag Meyer has another event in Kansas that I haven't been to yet. So all these events are popping up, and there's a lot of leaders who are stepping up too. And I'm like, oh man. So I'm trying to get connected and be friends with these people, because what's happening in the future, I think, is going to be, well, I heard the term sovereign towns yesterday, or Saturday. And I like the term intentional neighborhoods, but we're starting to find each other. And I think it's just a matter of building that network at this point.
Yeah. I'm so struck by your positivity, your kindness. Like I feel like a lot of people in the space understandably can be like frustrated or angry or whatnot. And like so just now as you're talking about all these other events that you're going to, like when you're traveling and you're dealing with TSA, is it totally natural for you to be kind when you're staging your events on the beach during lockdown, you're dealing with cops. Like, is all that easy and natural for you? Is that something you've trained in?
I've done a lot of personal growth, and there's still a lot to do, but I really was on and am on, the path for personal empowerment and self-control. And that was one of the good things I got from like the Christian organization. Was like, where is my power? And it's not out there. And these officials and other people don't have my power. It's I who have my power. And so I study a little bit of Gandhi, a little bit of Martin Luther King, this guy named Gene Sharp, who made a documentary titled How to Start a Revolution. And the concept is that nonviolence is more powerful than violence because the state is an expert in violence. So they don't know how to deal with people who are not violent, right? So all they can deal with is batons and weapons. But when someone's being peaceful but not cooperating and disobeying, they literally don't know what to do. And so that's part of what I think the next evolution is. There's a term called democide. A gentleman in the University of Hawaii did a study of the deadliest cause, or the most probable cause of murder or death, is the state. Death by government is democide. And it's like over 160 million citizens killed by their own government. And I'm like, that's so crazy if that's true. And you look it up, and he spent like 6 years doing this study. And I said, how come I never heard this before? Because government is organized crime, and it doesn't share the truth with other people, doesn't let people know who they are. So I realized that violence is not going to be the solution. And in some of these films and these readings, I think MLK went to jail like 17 times, and Gandhi went to jail like 25 times. And that was like their badge of honor. You know, they're like, oh, how long did you go in? Oh, you only went in for a few months. Oh, come on, you know. And it was like, let's fill up the jails, you know, we're not going to participate in this thing. And whatever's coming next, you know, in this life, be prepared to not cooperate. You know, like, you don't have to be violent, but if you are giving them your money, you're giving them your children, you're giving them their attention and your obedience, you're participating in it. And if you want to, that's fine. You know, some people, you know, are afraid of jail or these kind of things, but it's almost like a paper tiger, where like the Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain's gonna come. And then I started to understand the compartmentalization of the police officers, because I'm from a small town. I got buddies who work for the sheriff and the local PD or the state patrol. They're not bad dudes. They're just doing what they're told to, you know, make a salary and get pension and have medical benefits. And that's success in their mind. And maybe for people like us in the audience, we want to have a different goal, like a peace of mind, or righteousness, or goodness, or harmony, or collaboration, or these other things, fulfillment, self-respect, some of these things that are higher than money. And that's what I tell some of my friends, you know, if your job requires you to hurt peaceful people, you got to quit, man. You know, you can't let money be the highest thing in life, because you're a spirit, man. You're a child of God. And you know, imagine like all the effects that you could create if you had like put money to the side. And I'm not against money. Money, let's earn a lot of money, but there's a higher thing to aim for. And so I started to understand the cops when I'm talking with cops now. I understand their position a little bit more. And one of the techniques that I'll share with you that I got from that documentary, How to Start a Revolution, was how to co-opt the law enforcement in these various countries. He was His book is titled From Dictatorship to Democracy, and he was showing people how to bring down a dictatorship to bring it to a democracy. And so he wasn't a voluntarist yet. He didn't get to voluntarism yet, but he did teach me this technique. And the technique is this: when the cops are doing something to you or the military, you lead with love, you lead with a flower, you lead with a bottle of water, you lead with a snack or something like that. And then you say, I know you're a good guy, but it's the politicians in those buildings that are making you do this. Well, the politicians are making us do this too. So you're a victim of the politicians, and we're a victim of the politicians. And wouldn't you agree, victims shouldn't fight victims? And so you enroll them in the idea that the same oppressor is oppressing us both. And so now join the team. And so that goes again with like the new society that's building. Like, there will be space for you in the new society, or in their case, like the new government, right? This government was going down, there's a new government going up. And so just learning some of these techniques, because ultimately I go to these events, and maybe you and your audience have too, and you're looking for the superhero, you're looking for a savior, you're looking for like the dude or the lady with the answers. And I found out that nobody has all the answers. Everybody has a little piece of the puzzle to contribute. And so, how to connect these pieces of the puzzle so that then now it's like, okay, now I have this mosaic of what I see to be some solutions, and I can now give them out to people, right? And that's part of my goal in my talks and presentations, is like, let people know, yeah, it's pretty bad out there, but we can do it. You know, we can figure out a way, and there's going to be major challenges. You know, for the last 100 years has been going on. Okay, didn't just happen in the last 4 years. And it's like, I can't believe some of these things, because again, My hometown has like 5,000 people in my hometown. And so just to imagine the world as it is and what's been going on for 100 years, I'm just like, is anybody going to do anything? Well, it's us. It's you. It's me. It's the people listening. It's these people at these events. And the more we get together and have these kind of conversations of we can, we will, we do. And if not, at least we tried.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, at least we tried our asses off. So, has that worked in your experience with cops? Because I know, you were leading these actions during lockdown in Santa Cruz. You were dealing with cops a lot. Did you find that that worked in your favor to enroll them?
Sometimes I've had some encounters, and I think it's on my Freedom Law Academy YouTube channel. I had a private plates on my car because I was a right to travel activist, which means driver's license are commercial and you don't need them. You have a natural right to travel onto earth from God or source or creator, whatever you believe. And so I was tired of participating in this whole thing, right? I went to an Acapulco and I'm like, what can I do? I don't want to give them money for war. I don't want to bow down. I don't want to, give the children to the government. What can I do? And so I said, well, maybe I'll just do this because that's like, it's a risky thing to cooperate. It's risky to not cooperate. So choose your risk.
Right.
So I put private plates in my car. I had a suspended driver's license at the time for some other activism. And I did. I talked to cop off the ledge and he let me go with a warning. And I was like, I was going to lose the car again. I had my car towed multiple times and been arrested. But most of the times I was arrested is because for failure to identify. So a cop is just doing his job. He just has his procedure and protocol. So, he says license and registration. And, I reserve the right to remain silent, or I invoke the Fourth Amendment, the right to not be illegally searched or seized and have my property taken. They don't know how to deal with that other than kidnapping. So when they insist, this is my conclusion, when they insist on getting your license and registration, whatever, I say, no, I prefer not to, and I have a right to travel. I'm not a driver, I'm a traveler. And they say, sir, if you don't do this, here's what we're gonna do. And then that's their phrase, which I'll ask. I say, okay, if I don't give you my identification, what are you gonna do to me? And they will say, oh, we're gonna pull you out of the car or we're gonna take you to jail. I said, oh, in that case, now that you have articulated the violence which you're gonna put upon a peaceful man, I will now cooperate. I thought this was a peaceful encounter. And then I'll give my identification. And then they'll cite me or do what they have. So I realized that kidnapping somebody, arresting somebody is their like the trump card, or that's all they can do. So, but I don't want to sleep in a cell tonight, and I'm sure no one out there wants to sleep in a cell. So you can, when they give you an order, you can say, well, if I don't do that, what are you going to do to me? And then once they articulate the violence, now you, in all honor, you can say, okay, and you can cooperate with them. So that was one encounter that they did let me go. They did give me a warning. And then you got to choose your battles, right? The city, county, state, and federal governments are just tyrannies, and they're all based on coercion. And so what are you going to fight them all? No, we have a short life. So choose the mountain that you're going to dedicate your life to. And so that's why I chose education, because the children are the most vulnerable people on the planet. And I remember being a kid. Maybe you also very a bright young lady, young guy, boy, and we look up to the adults. We think the adults know what's going on. We yield, we shut up. And then as we get older, I realize these guys don't know what they're talking about. Everybody is just guessing, And so, and the kids are meantime being disrespected, coerced, forced, versus an honest adult who says, we don't know what's going on here. We're all just guessing. I wish someone would have told that to me. That would have been helpful. Or asked me about self-ownership. That would have been helpful, but nobody knew. So this is the realization, like, oh, I guess we're the ones we've been waiting for. This is interesting. I didn't think I was gonna, intend to be some superhero, when I came here, but it's probably why we came here. It's probably why we incarnated here. We see what's going on in Earth down there. Let's go in there and have some adventure with life. So back to the cops, it was just like having compassion for them, understanding their role. These lower level dudes, even middle management dudes, these aren't the total predator psychopaths at the top who definitely know what's going on. These guys are just getting a paycheck. So how to enroll them and again provide hope, because the bonfires, we did 70 bonfires on the beach there in a row in a week, every Saturday. And even when I was out of town, we'd have someone else do it. And I called it the Voluntary Solutions Bonfire because everybody's coming. This is in 2020 to 2022, and they're telling me what Fauci's doing. They're telling me what Gates is doing. They're telling me what the county health department is doing. I said, I got it, man. I got it. What those guys are doing. They got the problem. Do we have any solutions? And so let's focus on solutions at this bonfire because we know what's going on there. And my few years with the Narcopoco let me know that we're the ones. We're the ones. So let's elevate our thinking and try to find some solutions. And that's where the challenge is, because we have so many habits of thought, habits of behavior, and habits of speaking that we're really unconscious. And even myself included too. And so especially some of the other people, it's like, how can we create the space so that we feel good here? And it worked out. And pretty soon it was turned into a potluck, and people were bringing food, and we had tables, and my buddy had a band. And some nights we had 70 or 80 people there on the beach and not cooperating with the authorities. They would come and threaten us. And some really positive encounters where I could feel the power shift between the people. This was early 2020. There's 12 of us on the beach. Mercedes was there. She was at Music and Sky at Luminary Village. And then it was like 10:30 at night, and the beach closes at 10 p.m. Okay, so the sheriffs come. And we had some beers too, and so they start harassing us and saying, "Okay, it's past 10 o'clock. You gotta leave. Oh, there's a bonfire too, and there's beverages, beer. Who's gonna take responsibility for the alcohol and the fire?" And all 12 of us, unrehearsed, sat there and just looked at the cops in complete silence. And the cop says, "Oh, all you guys want to be cited?" And we stayed silent again. And all of a sudden, these cops realize we're not going to be cooperating. And the only way they can get our identification is to illegally search us and take our identification. And these four cops with guns realize that these 12 people, unarmed, peacefully, were not going to cooperate. And I could feel the energy shift. And all of a sudden, I could just hear them say, "Uh-oh, what are we going to do now?" And they left us alone. They left us alone, and then they came back at 2 a.m. We still had a bonfire. There were six of us, and they left us alone again. And so there was encounters like that. And again, to be around other people who know who they are, who know their rights come from God or source, and we don't want to participate in this. You guys have shut down society. This is our church now, man. This is where we meet. This is how we get together as human souls. And why don't you join us? Why don't you join us on the beach here? Come be a part of this. But of course, they're slaves to their job, and we wish them well. But there were a lot of good encounters like that. Many of these were live streamed, and then that's why they started targeting me. And I couldn't speak at the 2001 Music in Sky because I had got arrested 2 days before I was going to speak, and it was just some crazy situation. Oh yeah. Yeah, the Music in Sky was like July 1 through July 4, and I was speaking on the 2nd, and they arrested me on the 30th. And just some of the internal documents were so interesting that the sheriffs had, and these kind of things. And it turns out civil disobedience and non-cooperation is a superpower, and I think we would be wise to exercise that here in the coming months and years.
Agreed, agreed. I don't think I'm alone in this, but like I've historically been terrified of cops. First, it started out as hating cops, even as like a little kid. And I've had a bunch of interactions with them, and it's like I could just feel like my heart will start beating fast, my voice gets shaky. I was arrested for walking in a park after hours. And something about my energy just like slipped out. It was a ranger, it wasn't even a cop. And he like lunged at me, and I'm not used to people laying hands on me, so of course I start fighting. And at some point he's like, "Stop resisting arrest." And I'm like, "Oh, is that what's happening?" And he takes me to Hollywood jail on a Friday night.
Oh
I'm in
no.
triple cuffs, everyone else is in one pair of handcuffs, and I got all these guys saying like, "What did you do that you're in triple cuffs?" It was very weird, and I kept trying to make eye contact with different officers because I thought, this is so stupid. Like, if I could just connect with one person on a human level, they'll uncuff me and let me go. And what I realized, because I was there for several hours, is that no one there was empowered. truly empowered, and no one had enough courage to make eye contact with me. And so I've noticed, like, and I think this is just a big piece, which is why I'm so excited we're talking about it, is like how to transmute this fear of cops, so that we can engage them in the way that you're engaging them and not let that be a barrier for us to standing in our God-given rights to speak, travel, breathe oxygen freely, all the things.
Yeah. Well, this is the big question, and good cops in the police departments will like blow the whistle on bad cops, but because it's a criminal organization, they actually suppress the good cops and they elevate the bad cops. So this is a part of the, I think the dichotomy of it all is that there are good people in these systems, but the system itself is a coercive, monopoly, centralized gang. And that's just the most accurate way I can call it. There's a book from 1870 titled The Constitution of No Authority by Lysander Spooner. And this was a lawyer from 150 years ago. And he's saying, you're not bound to a contract that you never agreed to. And your parents can't bind you to a contract that you never agreed to. So this is like one of the big red pills for people to be like, what? Like, this is not legitimate? No, even if you read the Declaration of Independence, it says the just powers of government are derived from the consent of the governed. So if we're the governed and our consent is required, and I never consented and nobody that I know ever consented to this, then it's unjust power, which is a tyranny, which is, you know, why it's going down. And they're freaking out because these ideas are getting out. So it's kind of like the school system too. You know, there's good teachers in the school system, but the system itself is a coercive, monopoly, centralized authority. So you can't reform the system. I don't think we can reform the police department. The best we can do, I think, is to have harmonious relationships with the people there. And if you're into law and paperwork or whatever it is, don't dehumanize them, but to see the human in them. And even psychos, you know, can feel empathy sometimes, you know. Dr. Edith showed me about the lady named Peace Pilgrim. And this lady, just a quick background, she was in a happy marriage, but her husband was a military guy. So she's like, I'm divorcing him. I want to support war anymore. So in middle age, she started walking across the country just in her shoes and her clothes. She gave away everything. And she said, walking for peace, changed her name to Peace Pilgrim. And she ended up walking like 25,000 miles over maybe 20 years. And she says, one time this big old guy was going to, you know, beat me. And so I just looked him in the face with just pure love. And I could just see him change. And he decided not to beat us up. I can't remember if it was going to beat up her or beat up this person. I think it was a child she was protecting. She like covered the child and like looked up the dude and said, he felt me. And he didn't, you know, beat me, right? Or beat us. So, and I was like, man, if that's true, that's a very powerful component because, again, violence and violence is not a solution. Killing people is not a solution. So it takes the courage of the leader, the activist, whatever it is. In Gandhi's case, when they were out there doing the civil disobedience with the salt, he told his followers, hey, when these soldiers come and they beat you, you do not fight back. You go inside and you let them beat you because when a violent person is beating somebody who's not violent, they get to see themselves and then they respect you more. Their respect for you increases and their self-reflection also increases. So now they're actually having this internal dialogue with themselves and they're like, hey, I am being a thug right now, and this person isn't even fighting back. Like, what's going on here? So that was his philosophy. That's hard to do. I can't say that I've taken a beating and not fought back because it's natural to do that. But this is the spiritual consciousness that Gandhi raised up, and I think it will come again. I think this kind of conversation is going to continue to increase in importance because, yes, we're Americans, and some of us have guns. This is all legit. But when we have a shootout and there's dead people laying around, what problem did we solve there? And this is something I also learned from Dale Brown, the Threat Management Center founder in Detroit, Michigan. And it's basically a private security force. That's not what he calls it. He calls it a private threat prevention organization. So his idea is to create conditions where threats can't even occur. I said, huh, say that again. Well, he's like, yeah, somebody breaks into your house and you shoot them. Yeah, it's probably lawful, but that guy has a family. So what problem did you solve? He created more problems. So he uses nonviolence, non-lethal weapons, and he's been doing this in Detroit for I think almost 30 years now. The police don't come in Detroit if you call them, so if they do, it's like hours later. So the middle upper class neighborhoods, they still want to be safe. They hire Dale for $10 a month, and he shows up. The first 10 minutes are free. And every minute after the problem, he charged them $1 a minute, and he's now crushing it. He went super viral on YouTube and has millions of subscribers now. And but the point was, is just that violence doesn't solve the problem, and he's a promoter of nonviolence, but his uniform and his appearance is that of violence. But his philosophy is to treat everybody like your brother, your sister, and like a cop shows up and they start shooting out people. It's like if you're at your brother's house, you wouldn't do that. If you're showing up at your barbecue and someone's had too much to drink, you're not gonna show up and be that. You're gonna say, "Hey man, put your hand on the brother. Hey man, come on, let's go for a walk. Let's go outside." And that these are some of the techniques that he uses, just like superhuman connection techniques. And I think that's where this is all going because I don't know anybody that supports war unless you sell weapons. That's the only people who I know support war.
I love that Dale's doing this. It's brilliant. And I mean, I'm excited for that to catch on. I've been exploring free market anarchy, and it's, Albuquerque, which is about an hour south of where I am, they have a horrible crime issue, and it's so brilliant to just hire people to maintain the peace. And I really feel like this is the edge. Like this is the place where we're all being invited to step into our mastery, is to maintain that human connection, that human respect, and really keep it peaceful. I think that one tool is going to take us really far in what may or may not be unfolding where we're at now. I didn't, wear a muzzle during that whole thing. I mean, there were a couple times when I had to, in which case it was like a full ninja hood and blackout glasses. But mostly I was free facing it. So I was attacked many times, and it was just a great opportunity to try different methods of how to deal with it. And the one that I honed in on that worked the best is when I would say, I have a medical condition that prevents me from covering my face. Thank you so much for being a compassionate human. And when I said thank you for being a compassionate human, I would just see their energy change. It was probably more of like a cognitive dissonance, right? Because I was telling them how to be. But that was another thing that I learned, is like, oh, people like to follow orders, so I could just give them new orders and different orders. But I noticed that peaceful thing was really the most effective.
Yep, that's right. People want to be peaceful and they just don't know their rights. And that's what we noticed too. After maybe the first year, we're like, this was the New World Order coming into play. We knew the vaccine was coming, right? We had already studied, in 2016, 2018, vaccines in schools. Brandy Vaughn is a former Merck pharmaceutical sales rep. And she told me in Santa Cruz on video, she says, the vaccine agenda isn't just about the children. They want to vaccinate everybody, adults, elderly, and everything. So we knew what was coming. So we're like, okay, how can we raise our frequency and do the best that we can? So we started giving out free hugs for 1 hour a week. And that was very interesting because free hugs wasn't about, hey, I have a medical exemption, I have a religious exemption, personal exemption. It was, we send you agape love, and that's it. And some people would come up to us because we had signs that say free hugs and it's just sending good vibrations to people. And some people are like, well, what church are you guys a part of? And we're like, we're not part of a church. What are you guys doing? We're just giving free hugs to people. Would you want one? And they're like, yeah. And they hug us, crying sometimes. They haven't been hugged in 6 months by anybody. The kids got masks on. They're like, can you hug the kids too? We're like, yeah. Like we started crying too. And so this happened a few times, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Like, agape love is a superpower. And all we need to do is just like 1 hour a week, we were doing that because logic and reason gets only this side of the brain, but love somehow touches the other side. And they were benefiting, but I was benefiting the most, I think, because I was learning how to generate love for these people and have compassion on these people. And some people, you know, about 2% of the people would come up and they're freaking out because of the news and what's going on. And you guys are giving out hugs in a pandemic and hundreds of thousands of people dead. Da, da. And we stay calm with them, understanding they're under hypnosis, they're under trance hypnosis. So they're stuck somewhere else. So we just say, sir, I understand your concern. Is it okay if I ask you a question? Yes, let's have a question. Okay, I said, who is responsible for your health? And they said, well, the government and me. And I'm like, no, the government's not responsible for your health. And then another person, I said, who's responsible for your health? The community and me. I said, no, I'm not responsible for your health. So I started to see that the inversion of personal responsibility is a technique that they learn in school and then they just accelerate it and accentuate it in adulthood. These adults, God bless them, well-intending people, they don't know who is responsible for their life. And so personal responsibility is the other side of freedom. And I started to say, oh, this is a serious problem. This is a serious crisis, guys. This is about like the basics of adulthood, which is who's responsible for me, who's responsible for you. And it is this collective socialist, communistic type thing where, yeah, you guys are all responsible for me. So do what I say because you're responsible for me. And it's like, dude, that's like complete opposite of logic, reason, freedom, or desirability. So this was a big discovery of the free hugs and just giving out the agape love as another way to try, a weapon for truth and for freedom. Free hugs was super powerful and maybe we'll bring it back. Who knows?
I love it. There's so much crossover, I feel, between our perspectives and the things that we talk about. And so, I talk a lot about how personal responsibility is also like if we're going to root causes, the fact that people are indoctrinated to give away their authority, to buy into the fiction that authority is something external and to not take responsibility. And I know you're very solutions oriented. So knowing where we're at now, and the humans are, at the levels of consciousness where everyone is at, do you see a way to help grown adults who have not yet learned to take responsibility, who are believing in government, who are, people with the white coats and the initials after their name? Like, do you think this is it for them, this incarnation? Do you think there's a chance to come in and help people learn and claim their agency at this stage of the game?
A great question. I will say yes, I am an optimistic guy, and I know it's possible that th they might have taken the exit, strategy already. I know people that got the jab that are not harmed. I know people that are no longer with us. So, if they're closed-minded, I would say it's probably over because we are living during the fastest rate of change in history for humanity, and the worst position to be in, I think, is this is the only way. I know it all. I know exactly what's going on. Versus the other way, which is like, I'm a little bit ignorant in the situation. I'm a little bit confused about life. I have some questions. I'll have an open mind. If you have some information, I'm open for it. And so these are the two different minds because the people that I think got these injections were people who were so confident in the authority, so confident in the medical system. And the people who didn't are like, I did a little bit of research on the government and I don't trust it, Tuskegee experiment and MK Ultra and all the experiments that we've seen. I can't remember the one, the authority with the white coats, but the Milgram experiment, that was a crazy one. I was just like, good gracious, man, we are in
Just
trouble.
shocking people.
Shocking people because the study must continue. And you hear the guy over the wall, they're like, ow, hurt. And the doctor says, the study must continue. And then the patient or the person being studied, the subject, He's like, so you'll take responsibility? And the guy says, yes, I will take all responsibility. What do you mean by the guy's cranking up the electricity, shocking the imaginary guy on the other wall? And I think they replicated that study and showed that it was 65% of people, and this is all throughout the world, will blindly obey orders from somebody in a white coat or an authoritative position, and up until the point of extreme pain or death for some stranger that they know they don't know and they never harm them. And this study, I think, happened in the 60s too. So I'm like, okay, so we can share this information with people. If they're open to hear it, great. If not, then I'm probably going to try to stay away from some of these people, because Carl Jung even said, he says, man is the great danger. We know nothing about him. We must study him. And, he was being a sincere, psychoanalyst, and like letting people know, like, it's the humans which can be dangerous, right? Like, it's not the gun, it's not the AI, it's not even nuclear weapons. It's the humans who are now wielding these types of technologies and weapons. So, if somebody has a closed mind, if they're not open to talk about morality, and this is again another basic question, which I discovered that most people don't have a moral code. And I ask them, I said, how do you determine right from wrong? And they don't have one. Some people do. Some people have a vague one, like treat others the way you want to be treated, which is better than, not having one. But the moral code is do no harm, or to put it in a proactive word phrase, which I appreciate you, I would say respect self-ownership, respect the property rights of other people. And so by respecting the property rights, including the body, this is my property, you don't use coercion, force, or fraud, intimidation against a peaceful person. This is the universal moral code that I've discovered and learned from other people that can take us to the finish line. This is a unifying moral code that we can get there if someone has an open mind to hear this information. And then for me, it was like, man, I went to college, got a business degree, and nobody's ever asked me about my moral code. This seems like an agenda. This seems like an agenda to create moral relativity, meaning, yeah, whatever somebody believes, that's what's right, versus self-ownership, property rights. This is the way to know if you're harming somebody, you're doing something. So I think the future is about these intentional neighborhoods, intentional communities, where we're in the same vicinity, and or with like this idea of a network society of like, hey, we're over here in Northern California, and then we have something in Central California, and Arizona, and we have buddies, and we have people we trust. They're like, okay, this is where your community is at, and okay, boom, now we can have some like trade lines or barter lines or something like that. Because another thing, and this is a really was emphasized in Music and Sky, was life force. And I'm seeing how money is directly related to life force. So every dollar that I use, I'm giving my life force to somebody, buying food, buying gas, buying whatever. And so by using my voting ability with my dollars, I'm now actually giving my life force to somebody I respect and honor and I want to be in relationship with, versus the Walmarts or the Pepsis or whatever else out there. So I'm like, wow, so this money stuff is very sacred. This life force is very sacred. And these are all things I don't think, like, I've just made some discoveries that no one else has made. This is something that other people have found out too. But in my journey, I'm like, wow, this is pretty significant that when I give my money to somebody for their fruit, like, it helps them out and it helps me out. And we don't have to give the money far away. It stays within the community right here. And I think, well, this is very cool. So I think that's where it's all going with the people, having the good people around us, people that have a moral code. And this conversation also will continue.
And did you come to your moral code yourself? Was it something like, how, is it universal? Like, what is your moral code, and how did you hone in on that?
Yeah. So the concept I promote is called voluntarism. The idea that all relationships need to be voluntary, and your audience can know if they're a voluntarist right now, or you can call it voluntary living. That's kind of a little easier, voluntary living. I said, I promise never to use force, coercion, intimidation against you. Do you promise never to use force, coercion, intimidation against me? Yes, most people will say, great, you believe in voluntary relationships. So the two principles of voluntarism is you own your body, the principle of self-ownership. And number two is respect for self-ownership. And that second one also could be called the non-aggression principle, respect for property rights, do no harm. These are some of the other things which have been articulated, and I like them. Some of my influences have been Murray Rothbard, Ludwig von Mises, Marc Passio, Larkin Rose, Étienne de Labouheyrie Squared, even the first Étienne de Labouheyrie. But it was Rothbard and Spooner who also helped me a lot. Spooner's from the 1800s, and he has something called the science of justice, and he goes pretty deep into the things as well. These ideas, they're not new, they're just new to us. They've been suppressed because a moral people is harder to control than an amoral people, than a group of people that say, oh, whatever, just do whatever you want, and yeah, harm people, whatever. But it's like, no. Don't harm people. That's the whole thing. Don't harm people and don't harm their property. That's the essence of this whole thing. And I'm just trying to understand the marketing aspect of it better so that we can get it to the masses. So it's not all these crazy words. And this is actually on the interview I did with Bob Stevens. I was going over these concepts too. And I mentioned non-aggression. And he was the one who was like, well, you're kind of invoking the thing that you don't want, right? And I'm like, great. So we kind of did some workshopping live on there, and that was part of where I got the respect for self-ownership. It was like, okay, I don't want to say I'm against war, and I think that's what you're talking with your book, right? Against tyranny. It's like, no, I'm for peace. I'm for respect. I'm for harmony. And by doing that, now I get excited. Now I'm like, yes, I'll put my flag in the ground for that versus against vaccines, against war, against all these things. No. Ooh, that's down here, but up here is I'm for what do you stand for? And I stand for voluntary relationships, and this seems to be the idea that can, take us to the next level as a human civilization where everybody can start talking about these things because so many people talk about the Constitution, and I mentioned the 1870 document. It has no authority. It's a piece of paper. If you want to have a real authoritative piece of paper, then you and I will do a contract. And I will put it into writing. I promise never to force or coerce you, Danny, and sign it here. And we put some penalties, some self-imposed penalties, let's say $1 million. And then you and I can make a contract. And then now we have a binding agreement that can stand in any adjudication or arbitration or court, even. And that's what I do in my school, too. I'll exclude the city, county, state, and federal government. So you and I can make an agreement. And we can exclude the city, county, state, and federal governments, just like any other contract. And actually, we can put a mediator in. We can put some friend in the mediation, say, hey, we're doing this deal or we're doing this project. And if there's any conflict, then this person will be the one who determines which way it goes, and we trust him or her. And that way, we can just have a self-enclosed conflict resolution strategy and not be dependent on the state or dependent on these other organizations that it's just a revenue racketeering scheme, regular court, family court, these types of courts, traffic court, like, man, we're just being extorted. So making private contracts with people, I think, is going to be an important part for voluntarism and people catching this idea of the moral code.
Agreed. And while you were talking, there were like six different places that I'm like, I want to go there, 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 there. So I'm gonna meter them out. The Constitution of No Authority. How does this help you in your daily life? It's like, okay, we know that this is BS, right? But even like I was wondering when you were pulled over and you're like, no, I'm a traveler, I'm not the driver. And it's like, does the cop know that? What does the cop do with that? So we see it, so many things are being exposed, but it hasn't necessarily translated into justice, being restored. Or so, like, the Constitution of No Authority, you know that you are not obliged to maintain any agreements that you yourself didn't make, but how are you applying that in your day-to-day, given that the world is where it's at now?
Beautiful. True liberation, I've concluded, begins inside. So when I am conducting my daily life, I am liberated directly because I'm directly connected to God or source. So all these other contracts around me, I know it's just criminal gangs. And I know that's kind of a harsh word maybe for some of these, good cops or soldiers or whatever out there. But another question to think about is, where do your rights come from? And do they come from the government? Do they come from a piece of paper? Or do they come from God, your humanity? And this is what's called self-evident, is that I'll ask people who owns your body, and most everybody says, yeah, I own my body. So great. So then you have ownership rights to your body. And so that's the part where I got mentally liberated, because I thought the government was legitimate. I thought the IRS, the city, county, state, all these organizations, I thought they actually had a lawful claim to 30% of my income. And, I really needed permission from them to travel on the earth and like all these things. And TSA, like going through TSA, like I used to be angry and it's still enraging, but, these machines cause some type of like unhealth, some kind of cancer type stuff. So I opt out every time. And I used to be a jerk to these guys because they were, violating my rights, and that's righteous, right? But then again, I start to see the humanity in them. And now when they do it, they say, sir, we're gonna pat you down, this and that. And they say, do you have any sensitive areas in your body? And I say, yes, my testicles, my penis are very sensitive. Please keep your hands off them. I straight face, right? And they look at me like this. And I say, come on, man, man to man, just try to keep your hands off. And if they do that, then that's because that's the main thing. They're just frisking you, dude. Like, this is totally disrespectful, man. So if they respect my request, then I let them carry on. But if not, if they start groping me, despite me telling them an answer to the question of these are sensitive areas, man, leave me alone. I say, hey, man, there's other jobs you can do. You don't have to violate people's rights, man. I'm sure you're a smart guy. You're a talented guy, man. There's other careers out there, man. You're not being part of the good team, man. And kind of like, it's like whispering in there. And versus, because if I'm loud and I'm direct, then they call the supervisor, and then they call the police, and it becomes this ordeal. Just with the TSA and understanding that I have a right and I know my rights, so I don't have to cause a scene every time. When I get pulled over, I don't have to get arrested every time, but I will give them the opportunity to leave me alone. You found me in peace, officer. How wouldn't it be fair if you left me in peace? Wouldn't that be fair enough? So you try to reason, see if there's a soul in them. You have discretion in your job, don't you, officer? You found me just like this. Could you just let me go too, please? And try to reason with them and use the power of the words to find the soul in them, to find the compassion in them. And it's, again, I used to think the freedom is outside, and of course it is, right? I dream of independent food, water, energy, healthcare, education, technology, art, entertainment, communication, all these things, and I believe we'll get there. But it doesn't start outside, it begins inside.
All right, superstars, that does it for the first half of my conversation with Dave Rodriguez. I highly recommend picking up the second half of the conversation because Dave goes deep into the amazing work he's doing in terms of voluntary learning, homeschooling, that whole realm. You can find the second half of my conversation with Dave, as well as all of my second half conversations, on both my Patreon and Locals communities. The addresses are in the show description. And to help those who are listening, multitasking, it's dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. I'm also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we can stay in touch. And since we are on the topic of homeschooling, I'm inviting you to check out my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy course for teens as well as grown-ups. The very best way to safeguard your teens, yourself, your loved ones from propaganda, media manipulation, and groupthink is to educate you and them as to how the techniques work, how the social engineers are attempting to manipulate us, to coerce us, to capture our attention. Once we know how the tools, tricks, and techniques are operating, they no longer have any sway over us, allowing us to safeguard our critical thinking, our agency, our sovereignty, and to come together to create a way better game. You can check that out on my website, dannykatz.com, or you can go straight to poppropaganda.com to learn all about it and to register immediately for lifetime access. That does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. Have a rockin' day. We'll see you over on the Locals and or the Patreon, because this is a second half conversation you absolutely don't want to miss. See you there.